You are listening to www.integralnaked.org. Take the plunge into primordial awareness.
Well, in today's spiritual scene, by applying that principle, it's quite pertinent. So there are many spiritual teachers relevant to our conversation who naturally express things in the masculine perspective. So they're teaching a spiritual practice, and they're talking mostly, and there are people sitting still in the audience listening to someone talking, and then they might also meditate, all of which are extremely masculine expressions. Now, that's 100% useful for someone totally identified with the masculine, and some percent useful for everybody, but it's limited. And therefore, for the people who are identified more with the feminine, they would need to then get up from that talk, get up from that satsang, get up from their meditation cushion, and love, be in community, dance, eat, dress, learn how to wear clothing that liberated the radiance of their heart and body, and exchange that with other individuals to liberate love amongst the whole group. Now, certain people that we both know aren't about to go shopping with their students. They aren't about to celebrate in communal ways, but they're excellent at what they do in terms of giving satsang or talking. Now, by freeing them from being all things, saying, you're great at this, now your students need to also do this, or even what we're doing now. If somebody comes to hear Ken Wilber, they should probably also go out and get laid in the most righteous divine sense, and those two together form a whole.
Anybody that wants to do that, please call me. I can arrange that. I'm going to think of a lot of the really well-known spiritual teachers. They really are wonderful people. Yeah. But one of the things that we think about doing is actually having a conference on this. Mm-hmm. And just get the conversation started, which I think would be very, very, very helpful. And again, the teachers that are teaching what they're doing, I think it's great. And a lot of if there's any, fear is too strong a word, because I really don't think these people are involved, for the most part, in avoidance mechanisms. Yeah. It just haven't had an opportunity, a chance. It's not what it's done.
It's mostly a blind spot, I think, actually.
It's just, in a sense, one of the saddest things is that the highest, broadest, deepest ways of consciousness, as we're calling them, post-conventional or spiritual, one of the best things they do is reanimate these junior levels and really set them free, really, really vibrating, very, very intense. And you would expect to see on general integral principles, but the more spiritual somebody became, the more they would inhabit these lower vehicles with gusto. And then it just doesn't seem to be happening with these. Yeah, and I think it's unfortunate because it's cutting off that potential in a really pleasant way.
Exactly. You want to liberate the masculine and the feminine 100% to be full. Now, what does full mean? As we said, from individual to individual, full varies. Some people are more one-sided than the other, but full is their native full expression. If there's a kink, which usually happens when somebody enters the boomeritis phase, they deny the lower chakras. Yeah. It's like when you kink a water hose. Yeah. The energy builds up on one side and it gets weakened on the other side. People in the New Age boomeritis phase of things tend to be kinked around the solar plexus heart level, so they allow the heart and higher chakras to express, but not the lower ones. That weakens them all together. You do not get kick-ass spiritual practice or kick-ass love embodiment in the world, the masculine and feminine forms of fullness, dancing, loving community at its most ecstatic, or absolute cut-through solitude at its most powerful, unless those lower chakras are fully intact and wide open, so the masculine thunder runs all the way up and down.
Yeah, well, there's also, in a certain sense, the higher energies infiltrate down and give energies to lower chakras, but in the other sense, the fundamental chakras are actually the fountain, the water hose that chases the juice up the other direction. And if you cut it off at that point, it's very thin and pale and even, even though it can be a very profound realization. Yeah. Again, there's no passion, there's not an intense passion of realization.
So the residual effect of boomeritis, as we were talking about earlier, even at the spiritual level, tepid, neutralized, lukewarm.
Yeah.
And people tend to actually identify that with spirituality, with boomeritis residuals. They go, oh, if you're spiritual, you talk like this. And so you go to a lot of spiritual teachers.
That's the boomeritis whisper.
Yes, exactly. And it stays there, if you don't open that whole lower area.
Yeah. What's the demasculinized, castrated is the obvious phrase. What's the equivalent of loss of feminine essence? What is it to be defeminized?
It's the lack of flow of energy through whatever body you're talking about.
Yeah.
So a defeminized gross level is a body that lacks energy, radiance, fluidity.
Shine.
Pardon?
Shine.
Shine, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's loss of shine is defeminized. Now, that could be shine at the spiritual level, literally the halo.
Yeah.
Or it could be shine at the bodily level. So when you become drab and gray, whether that's emotionally drab and gray, physically drab and gray, mentally drab and gray, spiritually drab and gray, you're defeminized.
You're defeminized.
You know, they're really very positive things that it's tempting to do. It's just a little bit of a snarl where the really healthy potentials of a very, very high level of development just gets sort of twisted back on itself, and then it cuts off the blood supply to all other parts of the body, and you get just a mess. And the sad part about it is that it really does that kink that you're bodily locating somewhere between the solar plexus and the heart in terms of the energetic component.
Right.
It's like when you cut off blood supply to a body part, you get gangrene. I mean, it's just both the upper and lower hemispheres start getting choked off in a certain way.
And that's where you get the pornography hidden, you get the food things hidden, and still a fairly high level of development above the heart. So you've got a lot of spiritual practitioners who have an incapacity to act with clarity in the world and their relationships. So one of the signs of what we've been talking about, that kink, are people who could meditate well or even do sacred dance well, and yet in their relationships and their lower and sexuality, there's all kinds of strange. They're not continuous. They cannot allow the purer forms of consciousness and light to come down from the top down through their sexual, their actual genitals. They cannot connect genitals while also maintaining a direct relaxation in consciousness and light without neutralizing their genitals. They cannot be passionately genital and stay rested in consciousness and light. That's the main sign of that kink. And so they're either fucking or they're resting in consciousness and life.
They're transcending in the almost pathological sense.
Exactly. Whereas if you're open the whole way, you can do both in the natural moment.
Yeah. What's the cultural cure? How do you actually see this going? It's what one or two or three things most need to be done to help alleviate this. And let's start with sort of the smaller circle, just with the actual spiritual community, practicing community. It's like you're not allowed to have the sexual module. Obviously, it's there, but it's not really, again, addressed in a certain way. Not because they don't want to do it, but it's just not something that's sort of culturally done in a certain strange way. And possibly because sexual energy, so the first, second chakra is at one end of the continuum, and the so-called transcendental version of spirituality is at the other. We really have a hard time getting these two extreme poles together. It's much easier to get fourth and fifth chakras together, the first and second together. I often get first and second together, often. Four or five times before breakfast, if I can. So, just because they're that polar extreme, it's very, very hard for people to remain both open, empty, and have intense sexual bliss arise in that empty space. It's like if they touch that genital energy, it's so powerful, and they're so not used to doing that in meditative states, that they just recoil. You either get entirely into it, in which case you lose both the higher forms of consciousness and love, or you recoil in the other direction.
Although there's a masculine aspect of sexuality, which is essentially residing as pure present consciousness in the midst of motion, the feminine aspect is the energetic aspect of sex that you're talking about. What it will require then is just as an intense practice as doing Aikido is doing sex. So not only is sex not viewed as a potential interruption of consciousness or meditation, but all of one becomes lovingly able to not dissociate from the full expression of sexual energies, genitally, but also in their being, which means, first of all, that people need to feel, okay, why don't I have a module for sexual energy? Why don't I have a module for how to eat in sacred style? Not just a diet that's good for you, but the actual putting the food in the mouth, feeling the taste of chocolate-covered strawberries dissolve on your tongue, and instead of egocentrically using that for your own benefit, allowing the taste of chocolate strawberries to dissolve on your tongue and radiating that happiness out to all beings, which would be a third stage, a transpersonal way of experiencing food. Why don't they do that with food with sex as much as they do for martial arts. Well, simply because they're more masculine, so they don't live in that domain as fully. But if you took a more feminine person and invited them to contribute equally to practices, then they would incorporate naturally. That's what almost... They would go, martial arts? I'd rather have chocolate-covered strawberries. You know, meditation? Let's have sex. I mean, you could think of...
in the chocolate-strawberries and sex category, because I want to be in that side of the street. And
sorry, man.
martial arts. Who needs it? I want the chocolate-covered strawberries.
Well, you want to experience them, but they're not native to your expression. We're sitting here for hours talking, and we don't have any chocolate-covered strawberries around us. If we were more feminine people, we'd be...
I do cereal. If it's not here, I will go and spend 4 hours doing chocolate-covered strawberries. Do you see importance for people to try to play both ends of the spectrum in terms of being active when they feel appropriate and allow themselves to surrender, be taken, to be ravished?
Absolutely.
And some men, obviously, that's one of the harder things for men, isn't it? Most of the impulse that they could find analyzed was any homosexual desire for the other man. It scared them more than anything else because it meant that they were going to be ravished, taken, surrendered, any of those expressions of femininity. It panics the male poles. So that obviously would be something that would come up for a lot of men in terms of trying to not only find a healthy sexuality in the lower domains, in the gut domain, mm-hmm. but also how to connect that with higher and wider circles of consciousness and life.
Yes,
well, until they embrace all manifestation with that same love and life that's happening in the genital area.
The key way to find your true sexual essence at each of these levels is to do both extremes freely, and then you relax and you find out your true expression. So for instance, just at the genital sexual lower chakra level, every human being, let's talk about men since we were talking about that, every man should be able in a moment to give it to someone genitally, to penetrate somebody physically completely and also to God, but they should also be able to receive and be penetrated open to God. And what that comes down to at a practical level at the lower chakras is a man should be able to take it anally as well as give it. And so a good test on how relaxed a man is at the lower level is, can he take a finger up his butt as easy as give penetration? Now, that doesn't mean he will enjoy them equally all of the time. It just means that he's able to relax with both reception and penetration completely, and then he finds what is his natural gift somewhere in that spectrum some percentage of the time. Now, when you expand that to the higher chakras, there are many teachers who talk about allowing your head to be like a vagina or receiving energy down as if you were a vagina. And there are also teachers who talk about being all pervasive consciousness that penetrates everything. Those are the masculine and feminine dimensions at a higher chakra level. But unless you could take it up the ass, you can't take it down the head. As you talked about, there are stories that you build on, like stories in a building. And so, yes, it's essential that at every level... A masculine person should be able to dress beautifully and dance ecstatically and sit in silent meditation for a week without moving, to talk about extremes. That doesn't mean they'll enjoy both equally, and that doesn't mean they'll be as good as both equally.
Yeah.
And once they're able to dance fully and sit silently, that doesn't mean they'll choose to do the same amount of time. But unless they can do that, they won't know their true essence, because they'll be resisting one of the poles.
Yeah.
And they, more importantly, or perhaps equally as importantly, they won't be able to be in a relationship with someone of their reciprocal essence, because
right.
they'll reject that part of their partner, the part that they are rejecting in themselves.
Right. What you're saying makes sense to me in every way. It also reminds me of the way that I generally define integral, because a lot of people think that integral means that you sort of have to cover all the bases, master all the bases, and then doing all the bases simultaneously all the time. So basically, integral for me means not that you have to be able to master everything, but that of all the domains that are present in your own makeup, that you're not dissociated or resisting any of them.
Yes.
And it's the same as, it's like saying you go through the oral, anal, phallic, genital stage, sexual development. To go through the oral stage, you don't have to be a master chef in order to do it. I mean, you just have not to split off those impulses.
No resistance.
On the way, exactly, no resistance. And unfortunately, what it usually means for most of us is, by the time we reach adulthood, we have to go back and recapture the ground. Mm-hmm. Because it's just out of the nature of things, you can't really inhabit some of these lower chakras with awareness while you're growing through them.
Right.
So it obviously opens itself to a much more integral spiritual practice. I mean, just in the spiritual dimensions of awareness that we're talking about, of consciousness and life, at body, mind, and spiritual levels, that men and women find ways to be open to consciousness and life at those levels, which means penetrating and being penetrated at all of these levels and domains.
And when you can do it in your own body, then you can find out what your gift is and do it through a two-bodied form fully.
Right. Right.
But only, as you say, you must have no resistance to do it as one body, both reception and penetration.
Right.
And then you can say, well, my actual enjoyment and gift is to do most 80% of the penetration and 20% of the reception, but
right.
then you'll naturally also attract the reciprocal who 80% wants to receive and 20%
yeah.
penetrate. Then you have no trouble with relaxing it and allowing it to come through two bodies. Now, at the social level, it's the same thing. It can come through many bodies. As you said, integral doesn't mean you do all things at all times as one body, but it does mean all things come through all bodies as a whole at some time.
Yeah, and there's just no blockage in those domains, dimensions, perspectives that are natively available to men and women at every moment, basically. Part of the things that you must see a lot is people that have, let's say, blockages in these areas are, in a sense, not only consciously sending false messages to other people about what they themselves want, but they're sending energetically confused messages, and they're attracting people. They're always confused by why they're attracting a certain kind of person. They're advertising is why. They just don't know that they're advertising. And people are answering the ads, and they're going, I don't know why I always end up with those kinds of dolts, idiots, dweebs. It's a long list of smart women, stupid choices.
Well, as you always attract a reciprocal, that's the energetic, you know,
yeah.
it's a polarity. And that applies to whether you're coming from a true sexual essence or a shell.
Yeah.
So if you're a woman, for instance, and let's say that your sexual essence is more feminine, but you've developed a more masculine shell because your parents gave you more credit for what you're going to achieve rather than the love energy you gave to the world, which is common, now you're walking around in the world with a feminine core and a more masculine shell.
Yeah.
So that means in your heart you want to be seen and felt and you want to offer love, but what you're doing with your life is attempting to achieve something. What you will attract in a partner then is the reciprocal. You will attract, if you're heterosexual, you will attract a man who at his core is masculine, is he wants to rest in consciousness and have a clear sense of direction, but his shell is feminized, perhaps because he was raised, say, with an alcoholic father who beat him when he asserted his own direction. He then feminizes he becomes more sensitive to energy so his father doesn't beat him. Daddy, is this okay? Is this okay? Rather than asserts his own direction. So very clear women who have developed a shell of directionality end up attracting men who are not very directional, tend to be ambiguous. So a lot of these very successful women end up attracting men who cannot commit, men who change their minds, men who cannot be trusted, because their clarity of consciousness has become diminished from a shell of false feminization. The reason we attract our partners is because, as you say, we're advertising both our essence and our shells. So we attract somebody who reciprocates our shells, which is a critical thing for people understanding why they keep attracting people of a certain type.
Let me focus on women for a minute in terms of how they actually start working with some of these issues, blocks, and so on. The possible pitfall, so to speak, on the masculine and feminine side of this practice of consciousness and care and compassion, on the female side, a female essence, which is to basically be associated with manifestation, associated with life, identified as energy, radiance, shining, therefore wanting to be seen, wanting to be attractive, judging herself as to the degree of attractiveness she has as a measure of her own shine. And in the spiritual path that takes advantage of that natural strength, the tendency is to be merely one with phenomenal manifestation and to have no moment of freedom in the midst of your fullness. And another definition of that is addiction.
Mm-hmm.
You're simply stuck in the phenomena. It looks like you're dancing, but you're really addicted. It looks like you're moving with it, but you're really just attached. And what's a good way for women to work with that? What do you see as the pitfalls to that? How do they get the moment of consciousness into light so they're not merely the phenomenon?
In the pre-conventional approach, the feminine says, look at me for my sake. They want to be felt as attractive. In the conventional approach, they want to balance that out and they feel, well, you look at me and I'll look at you equally. But in the third stage or post-conventional approach, they feel, I am light and my offering is light for the sake of all beings. And so the way that the spiritual approach to the feminine becomes non-addictive is when it's offered for the sake of all beings rather than for the sake of self.
Well, let me ask though, is that how they experience it as well as an offering? Isn't the fact that you offer something meaning that you have a sense of transcendental distance from it as well? Do you see what I mean? Is there a differentiation that occurs if you're offering something, you're not merely that?
It would be good if a woman was here with us. I mean, when I teach, I usually teach with a woman. I'll do my best. When the feminine is offering that light, there is no sense of separation. They are one with the light. However, there is a sense of feeling all other hearts and that light being offered. I am an offering.
Yeah.
There is not a sense, as far as I could describe from my masculine perspective,
right,
that they are separating from the offering into freedom, so to speak.
Yeah.
Now, they can do that. Any individual can move to the freedom side or the light side.
Understood.
But if they are in the more feminine expression, that separation doesn't have to
now work. What gives the, and let me think of a term that doesn't prejudice one side of the polarity or the other. Let's call it the enlightened state, even if it's sort of an idealized state. And the enlightened state is that in which, and it's so inclusive, that neither one of those things are left out. Okay, is that good enough?
Yeah.
Now, it's not necessarily that women find a distancing component of freedom in order to be enlightened, but it is necessary that they're not merely one side of that.
Yes.
Now, so where does the freedom ventilate the fullness? In other words, how do they get out of being merely full?
Well, as you know, the aspect of one taste is that all shine is, we could say, is the shine of consciousness.
Yes.
And all consciousness is the cognizant aspect of shine, of light.
They say emptiness is the emptiness of form. It's not something other or apart from form. It's the transparency shimmering of form as it arises.
So native,
exactly what you feel you are at that moment.
And that's the answer to your question.
But can you tell when there's not that oneness in the taste?
Yes.
How can you tell that?
Because from the feminine side, there's a hook of needing to be noticed shining.
Okay.
And in the masculine side, there's a hook of needing to be free from something.
So in a sense, the freedom component to I'm not going to give up on the Y chromosome here.
Let's go for it.
Don't worry, I'm holding up my hand there. In a sense, the freedom component is they're free from lower constricted versions of life. See what I mean? Each wave of life transcends and includes its predecessor in that sense. So it's not a transcendence, it's distancing. But it's just a wider, deeper encompassing.
I would say, and I think you have also said this before too, is it's not a freedom from, it's a free as.
Yeah.
And so it's a free as every level.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, how about if the feminine essence loses, let's say, temporarily loses touch with the transpersonal, spiritual version of light,
right,
and finds herself merely in a conventional mental or bodily light, then what's the experience of loss as? What is being taken away from her? What's she out of touch with?
Well, that happens all the time to all of us. And so, for instance, in a workshop setting or when I'm working with people, and we'll talk about women first, let's say that we're all moving to express light through our bodies or through our hearts to all beings.
Right.
So the practice is to feel, let's start with just everyone in the room, we can imagine a room full of people, and to keep your heart connected to their hearts. So there's a continuousness between your heart and everyone else's heart. So the practice is to maintain that continuousness of feeling connection, of heart connection, while offering yourself as a surrender of light for the sake of others, Now, when you're practicing that, there's a consensually validatable feeling in the room, and other people would feel that about you. There's a fluidity to your movements. There's a grace that comes. It's a form of art. Yeah. Now, when someone falls out of that, depending on how far they fall, they either begin to identify at the social or conventional level. Their movements become a little safer.
Yeah.
They are dancing, but it's like, are you okay with this? Is this okay for me to do? There's a bit of self-consciousness. Yeah. And when they go to the first or pre-conventional state, they're just, am I looking good?
Yeah.
They're so self-conscious, you could feel in a person. And again, this isn't just subjective in the sense of one person. You could have a whole room of people vote, and it'll be a unanimous vote. The person will feel recoiled onto themselves, turned onto themselves, totally self-conscious. Their movements will express that. Their facial expressions will express that. And everyone in the room will feel it.
Right.
Now, the masculine side of this is the same thing. When somebody is living their purpose, for instance, when you're writing or speaking, like we are now, there are probably moments when a group of people would feel the divine is coming through them as words, just like the divine is coming through these dancers. Then there's moments of social okayness. Then there are moments of self-consciousness. Well, those are fluid, and what to me true spiritual practice is realizing that moment to moment we shift through, let's say, those three stages, pre-conventional, professional, post-conventional. And what really good teachers and practices do is, without belittling anybody, it's a reflection of, that's a first moment, first stage moment, second stage moment, third stage, second, third, first, third. And slowly over time, with the right practices, you begin to just relax the first and second stage needs. They become embodied and encapsulated. Like you say, they're concentric spheres. So you never hurt yourself for the sake of others, because you take care of yourself too. But the emphasis is on, I've taken care of myself, the social situation is good enough, I am an offering for all beings. My light is an offering to all beings, in which case it's not your light, it is you are alive as light, as all beings.
Right.
Your consciousness is alive as the consciousness of all beings. At that level, your consciousness and light are felt to be just different aspects of the same one expression. And so at that level, a woman or a man or a feminine person or a masculine person, whether they're expressing light for the sake of all beings or being the consciousness that is all beings,
right,
it's identical.
Now, what's the correspondence, the masculine version of not quite being in that sahaj, one taste? In other words, we just talked about the feminine version, which is the tendency to want to be noticed, and that causes a separative moment right there, which is enough itself to separate light and consciousness.
Yes.
Which is what's so interesting. Yeah?
Yeah.
So now on the masculine side, the gentleman is there, and what's enough for him to separate consciousness and light? In other words, you briefly mentioned it earlier, and you said it's his tendency to not want to touch something. In other words, there's a recoil, a slight recoil from allowing everything to arise in the space that he already is. And is that essentially what he's still holding on to some aspect of it? He's pulling back from the light?
Well, we talked about one, I gave one example of the feminine version, and one example of the masculine version, for instance, is even needing to be right. That would be one example. So anytime consciousness identifies with one perspective,
right,
and therefore excludes other perspectives, which is a form of exclusion as you're talking about, but it's a specific form, that would be a primary fall, if you will, or forgetting, if you will, of the primary unity. So anytime consciousness forgets that what is arising as form now is not only one of many possibilities, but unnecessary. It's not important. It's not necessary.
And consciousness in its own state is not doing that in any event. It is already not taking those perspectives.
But you're talking about the fall, so that's what
what I'm saying. Somebody does take that perspective,
exactly,
and that person is already not doing what consciousness is already doing.
Exactly.
So
but that's the masculine version. It's often quite subtle, and then it becomes, in the first stage, it's just my way or the highway. You know, it's very strong, self-centered, I'm right.
Yeah.
And then in the second stage, it's kind of like, well, you have your perspective, I have my perspective, they're both equal in the conventional level. But in the post-conventional level, it's you have your perspective, which is an illusion, I have my perspective, which is an illusion, let's enjoy the dance, but let's primarily connect this consciousness, and that all illusions are equal in that. Now, they're not all equal in the relative scheme, but from consciousness level. So it's a communion of consciousness. The oneness of consciousness is forgotten. And a perspective, any perspective, no matter how high it is taken to be true.
Well, that's the version of pathological agency in the post-conventional dimension, which is the dimension of always already awareness anyway, which is, I mean, it's right on the edge of that.
Yes.
And it is a very subtle recall, and you can feel it. That's what's so astonishing. I mean, it's a very subtle but very palpable thing.
One of the main practices we use when I work with people is having groups of people consensually validate or meter people's practices, because oneself, it's so easy to delude ourselves. So whether you're dancing or sitting in silence, people can feel, as you say, it's palpable, it's tangible, it's obvious when somebody is allowing God or the absolute or spontaneously expressed conscious life to come through them. Mm-hmm. There's a certain feel to that, and everyone in the group will feel that, and they'll say, that's it. And then when someone loses that, they go, oh, it's lost. And you can even have degrees. So if zero is total enclosure on the separate self, and
right.
10 is total relaxation as always already conscious light,
right.
you could have a group of people going, 10, 8, 8,
right.
4, 3. And it's pretty unanimous. It's shocking how consensual that validation can be.
Right.
And so one of the steps from the conventional stage is the willingness to trust the feedback of a group of others of your same practice level more than your own feedback, because your own feedback is limited by your own shadows and projection and defenses, whereas if you have a group of people, they kind of cancel out each other's idiosyncrasies, and you get a very good feedback. And since at the post-conventional levels, your consciousness is their consciousness, your body is their body, you're basically just trusting a larger part of yourself rather than your own body-mind, and that's an essential practice in all of this.
I can't wait to see the meter on finger up the butt. That should be kind of... you get sort of a whole notion of the actual kind of monitoring you could do on all levels, all lines, all types.
Exactly.
We'll leave it up to the men, and we'll have instrumentation on all of this in no time at all. It does bring up another really interesting issue, though, which is we've been talking in sort of general terms, and there is an important distinction between states of consciousness, stages of consciousness. And I think it's really important for the kind of work you're doing, because if there's one way to look at body, mind, and spirit as a stage phenomenon, because in some sense they are levels, and in some sense a center of gravity can progress through those stages, what a stage conception is. But one of the interesting things about those three is that they also legitimately apply to states of consciousness, and also to bodies in terms of energetic components. The obvious one is the way we've been using gross cell and causal energies. And in the traditions, as you know, those are associated with three major natural states of consciousness, which are waking, dreaming, and deep sleep. And so waking consciousness is defined as a consciousness of gross bodies. But the thing we all have in the gross waking state is awareness of rods and trees and cables and anything in gross realm. The sleep state is defined as basically there's no gross realm. There's no nature, there's no body, there's no rocks, there's no trees, there's just these subtle energies and images, lights, forms going on. That's a state of consciousness whose energetic component is the subtle body.
You're talking about dream as opposed to dreamless sleep.
And in deep dreamless sleep, is the formless, basically the causal, which is pure emptiness. And that's a similar state as deep dreamless sleep, which is a similar state to nirvana, or the formless unmanifest domain. And one of the reasons that I think what you teach this is so useful is that if these were looked at merely in their stage components, then they really wouldn't be necessarily available to people as easily. Because the whole point about a stage conception is that a stage really is a stage. You really can't jump stages or skip stages or just not how it works. But these aren't just stages. They're energies that are already present because these states are already present.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the interesting aspects about this in terms of monitoring of how people are doing is monitoring your own energetic body. And in the traditions, classically, you have the physical gross energies. Then outside of that, there's the subtle energy. And then around that is sort of a causal field which fades off into infinity. And to the extent that you're running up the states of consciousness, ego to body to mind to spirit, you're running up and down the energetic continuum as well. So there's these gross, subtle, and causal energies. And there really is an energetic transmission in these things. As people shift into this causal state, in masculine or feminine form, then there's an energetic component that goes with that. And in many ways, that's what people are really picking up on the register.
Yes.
Actually, you can feel when something gets very gross and very heavy and very dense, when they start to get very subtle, not light and airy fairy in that sense, but there's an intensity and a subtlety and an extension about the energies that's very exquisite, very radiant, very beautiful. And so it's this whole continuous monitoring system that people have for when they're living up to their own capacities.
Yeah. And it helps in your own personal practice to have developed those capacities. So as we're sitting here now, and I know you practice this a lot, but to be able for you and I to be rested in the place that's already deeply asleep, together though,
yeah.
And to be sensitive to the dreamy or subtle level of ideas and exchanges and feelings and much more subtle things that are occurring between us now, without losing touch with the part of us that is in the deep bliss of causal sleep, and then also to allow the play of our words and our bodies at the gross level here to exchange fully without losing that awareness, without losing the awareness of the subtle exchange, and without losing the basis or the resting place where we are already one, because there's only one causal isness, but there's multiplicity in the subtle and in the gross. And to be all of those together at all times, and then to allow both the expression in the energetic dimension, the feminine dimension, and the unity in the consciousness dimension at the same time, so our clarity of purpose is never forgotten, but also the spontaneous playfulness of our energies at each of those levels is never forgotten, is what you call the integral expression that is a unique taste and shape for you and I as characters, but at the causal level would be identical to everyone. At the subtle level, it depends on their subtle disposition. At the gross level, it would depend on their gross disposition. It would be unique.
Yeah.
And so that full integral expression is not caught on tape, because tape really only picks up the gross exchange. And that's one of the things I think when people read your work, they often are picking up this sometimes mental exchange, but they're not with you personally, so they can't feel the causal and subtle and the playfulness, the humor, the love, your lipstick, and the full spectrum isn't there, and it can't be in a written word or in a recording. Although sometimes you can feel it expressed through those means, so it's helpful to sometimes have a bodily interaction, videotapes. Every media transmits a different level, but being in person, in a room with someone, feeling them, their body, their subtle dimension energetically, and also that causal communion, if you will, allow that language.
Yeah.
That's a full spectrum metering and communion, and agency from that connection is aligned with the source rather than just...
Yeah, it's so much better if you hear these things in person, because it's a dance of energy and vibration between people. It's beautiful, it's really wonderful, and absolutely none of it is captured in a print form. And so that part is really difficult, but it's very, very hard to do that kind of criticism, because it's a whole body criticism. When it's done right, it's going from gross, subtle, and causal dimensions to consider this together. And then it ought to be fairly humorous as well, which is, it's working, it makes you laugh.
Well, earlier we were talking about the masculine air, and we were talking about how from the unity of consciousness, which encompasses all perspectives, you begin the errors to identify with one.
Yeah.
And when you are writing anything or speaking anything, it enters the relative. And by definition, you must take a perspective.
Yeah.
Now, the feeling of that, if you're with somebody like you in the room, is that no humor is lost. That is, you're saying a perspective, and you could even be defending it strongly, but the humor, the looseness with which the perspective is held, is felt body to body. There's a love, there's a humor. Yeah, you're asserting a perspective, but there's no perspective. So now, when you put it in writing, especially if someone's not at that place themselves and can't feel the humor even in the room, they're going to read that perspective and actually feel he's asserting this perspective is the right perspective and mine or some other one is wrong.
Yeah.
Now, even if you say that, if you're coming, as you say, from the causal, subtle, and gross point of view simultaneously, there's a looseness to that expression.
Yeah.
Like we're talking now, like, I don't really care what's masculine, what's feminine, what these levels are, but we have to say something, and sometimes there's poetry in that, sometimes it's useful for someone, useful for ourselves. But in the end, It's just life, love, consciousness. Now, you know that. I know that in our good moments. And if someone, like one of your critics, were to be able to abide with you in that humor, they would be able to feel even your criticism as a play in that domain. You might be very serious about it, but it's loving, it's playful, it's compassionate. But that's very difficult to get in writing, but it's even more difficult for someone who's not used to abiding that way person to person to get it through writing, even when it's possible to get it through the
writing. Understood. And we're taking the best possible light on all of us at that point,
yes.
Assuming that we can make our perspectives with that love, light, embrace, and openness. It's really emptiness, clarity, and care, compassion. And if each moment resonates with that, then it's the fullest chance to communicate those. And sometimes there are times when you can write very academic prose with a certain passion that actually is almost luminous.
Yes.
And there's places where I've attempted to do that. And academic stuff, you're not generally allowed to do that. So sometimes an academic book, I'll save the last chapter and sort of put it all in there. I figure, okay, if they've gotten this far, now I can really, you know, blow my cover, so to speak. But it's a funny thing. It's very, very rare where men are encouraged to shine in that dimension, which is tragic. It's really, it's not just the clarity of thoughts you want to convey, but it's a passion, it's an intensity, it's an energetic component that just makes grown men weep if you do it right.
Well, that's how the feminine or women feel all the time. You know, the feminine always feels like there's, not always, but the feminine in general feels like this world does not allow the luminous expression that a more feminine person would usually like to be expressing. They have to make a point. They have to go from point A to point C by going through point B. The masculine will say, what's the point otherwise? Stop being so loopy. What are you trying to say? Clean up your room. Do something. You know. And what you're talking about really is academia has been up till now a highly masculine endeavor. And so when you're writing in the masculine vein, everything is on a grid. Everything is clearly analytical. One thing leads to another. You get kudos. When you allow that more luminous, poetic, not necessarily one point after another, but highly expressive, passionate, energetic expression to come through. In the academic field, if you're writing poetry, it would be fine, but in a poetry journal, say. But in the academic world, it's very, not a lot. And again, that's something people don't really get about you, that you do write in a feminine style sometimes. It's just not allowed that much in academia.
Yeah. So now, you've written some of these same kind of pieces about several people, in terms of kind of really a loving gift that also includes certain types of criticism held lightly.
Right.
Now, why, see, I clearly don't know that, you see. Now you, on the other hand, see, you're really in trouble here. Now, why did you commit that to print where the shine is going to, a lot of it's going to not come through?
Well, in Waiting to Love, I had an essay about you, Ken Wilber is a Fraud, and I wrote a number of other essays, and I showed them all to the people I wrote them about.
Yeah.
And actually, you're the only person who allowed me to use their name, and some people didn't want me to publish it at all. Because again, your humor, you knew me enough to know that we're both coming from the place of love.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
both just a humorous thing. The other people, even knowing me, were not able to abide in that place. So it could just be that I'm a hack writer, and they didn't want that kind of writing about them.
Well, we all know that's true. we sort of take that for granted.
Okay, let's take it.
Something else that kind of got to us.
Probably. You know, most of us...
Well, why? Now, seriously. Now, I'm not naming names or anything.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, they're just too... there's no real pleasant way to say it, is there? I mean...
Well, they felt it would hurt them professionally. They felt that other people would misunderstand, as they have about the essay I wrote about you. They either really think I'm criticizing you seriously, or they think I'm trying to, in cahoots with you, do some strategic thing. Everything but the obvious, that we're two guys love each other, we're having fun through the written form. We're loving each other through, I mean, there might be a few true things. We're both characters, we both have our undeveloped areas. I mean, that's useful
to yourself. Out. What
I am.
Now, are you? But it's okay to me if these other people who shall go nameless didn't want to get involved in this or didn't want you to do it because they thought that the average reader would misunderstand your intent and they were acting, let's say, out of a passionate concern for your well-being.
No, it was for their well-being.
That's what I thought.
That's how they expressed it.
So they're just manny-toties. But by their sense. Don't you think just a little bit too full of yourself, though? I mean, however you want to say it. I mean, I don't really understand that aspect of it. I honestly was, I was taken aback by the degree of misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to sort of, you know, sugarcoat one side or the other. It's my honest opinion that I don't necessarily find that objectionable. In this one particular area, there was such a misunderstanding that I have to kind of look also at what a cultural background might be that would predispose so many people to misunderstand.
Well, again, your Boomeritis description, I think, is right on the mark. You don't criticize people. In fact, it can't be done as a form of humorous love from
Boomeritis. Well, I think it's Boomeritis, but I think in this case, I don't think they, my sense is that because we don't have a healthy Greek attitude to male love, basically. Right. You're just not allowed to do that. They've never, in my sense, with these people, I've seen two men walking down the street holding hands and loving each other.
Well, there's a way of us holding hands and loving each other.
Everybody completely missed that. Not because they're dull-witted or slow or any of that stuff. We're unprepared for it in this culture.
We're unprepared for it both emotionally as men loving each other, but also the extreme masculine expression, like the extreme feminine expression, is suppressed. Now, the extreme masculine expression is love is expressed through criticism, as we've been doing right now. Like you say, you retarded moron, you know, you idiot.
Well, it's a Three Stooges.
Exactly, but even in the Marines, where someone says, you know, you earned 50 push-ups, it inspires people. If you're masculine, it's an inspiration to be criticized. If you're feminine, it is not. The feminine grows by praise. The feminine grows by loving praise. The masculine grows by loving criticism. It actually thrives on it. There's humor in it, and even if it's accurate, if it's done lovingly, we grow.
Yeah.
I mean, but the feminine does not. So in the 50-50 smoothed out conventional culture, the extreme masculine, extreme feminine, not allowed. So two men who love each other, one, that's not allowed. Two, who love each other through masculine means.
Right.
I think more people would accept us hugging each other than lovingly criticizing each other in such a penetrating way.
Yeah.
Whereas that's a very valid form of masculine love. In fact, it's an extreme, very high form, but an extreme masculine form. Even like in academia, you could be enemies, or you know, best friends in martial arts could fight right on the edge of competition, or boxers often after a really close boxing match, they just hug each other. So they're through challenge and criticism and finding each other's weakness, it's a way of expressing love.
Yeah.
That I also think is a reason that those essays were misunderstood by people. They don't embrace love between men, but they also don't embrace the masculine expression of criticism as a form of love.
Yeah. But also, what I was talking about earlier, really about taking it up the butt in a certain way. In other words, he said one man can't be receptive to that intense degree to another man.
Loving
that,
right?
Exactly. And if somehow that's happening, it's some horrible, horrible thing that's going on.
Yep, I agree.
Which I just, you know, I mean, I just, it's that sort of cultural background that strikes me as responsible for as much of the misunderstanding as anything else.
And the surprising thing is a lot of those responses came from supposedly highly evolved people. So it was like a Rorschach blot.
But see, this is what we talked about earlier, is that even spiritual teachers that are really wonderfully, wonderfully developed in their own particular level, line, state, type, or aspect, but not necessarily in these other ways, because we all come into adulthood sitting on a distressed foundation.
Yes.
The first three chakras cannot be fully, healthily developed when you're growing through them.
Right.
It's just that's the nature of it. And so you have to go back and do this reclamation work we're talking about. You have to go back, fine-tune them, get in touch again, polish them up, find out what parts have been dissociated, what parts have been still fixated to you. And both of those are a problem.
Yes.
So even spiritual teachers, because they have not been able to redress this distress in the lower chakras, when they see what I took to be a healthy criticism on your part, and I was willing to take up certain areas without flinching, I'd like to point out. I think it was just shocking. No, I just don't think it worked. And just because of that, because there was a chance to kind of go back and open up, flesh out, fill out, full up, and get free up simultaneously.
And people often spiritualize those imbalances then at those higher levels, that the very imbalances that could be redressed, they make as spiritual virtues.
Yeah.
So a spiritual virtue is not criticizing someone. That's a virtue made out of a pathology that was never redressed in this domain.
Yeah. maybe the last thing we should talk about in the introductory stuff is the questions that were still lingering in the air, whether one or two or three things that could best be done to move this conversation forward among the spiritual community. And I want to mention names and certain sets of examples of the type of teaching, but I don't in any way want to imply that these people are or are not doing what we're talking about. You take The Power of Now, for example, which is just a wonderful book. It's these wonderful orientations where you're getting people into an awareness of spatial consciousness as opposed to the linear temporal consciousness. Mm-hmm. You stand back as all space and see objects, and it's a very masculine approach to it, but that's okay. How do you sort of, what would you, on your wish list of how this thing could move forward, what are some of the things that you'd like to see?
Well, I would apply the aqual vision, use levels, use lines, use dimensions. With The Power of Now, can you reside in the now while you're having genital sex?
Right.
Now let's just look at that. Can you reside in the now while you're passionately, even aggressively, receiving ravishment? Can you, probably not. There's edges to it. So what are the practices you need to liberate your energy and your attention, your feminine aspects and your masculine aspects, while receiving intense genital penetration, so you can reside in the now? Now, when you can do that, can you reside in the now and then bring in the interpersonal, intersubjective dimension? Can you reside in the now, feel the hearts of all beings, and receive intense sexual penetration? Well, that would be an expansion over what's in that book. Can you wrestle physically and maintain your awareness and feeling to the hearts of all beings, breathing them in and out so you never lose contact with all beings, and be able to offer your deepest gift without leaving the now? Can you maintain those practices in the lower chakras, except in the upper chakras, while sitting in the interpersonal dimension, so that you're talking with other people, you're in a community, you have other people giving you feedback? There's so much room for delusion. Yes, I'm in the now, but everyone feels like you're an asshole.
Yeah.
So what kind of feedback can you use so you could be in the now and develop your pranic body? How can you be in the now and develop your physical body? How can you be in the now and develop your emotional body, your mental body, every chakra? How can you develop the masculine and feminine aspect of each of the bodies and be in the now? So they're so rich. Yeah, being in the now is essential. However, being in the now and being a full expression of the human being at every level, say the chakras,
right,
and the masculine and feminine dimension of every being, every level of being, that would be a test. So on my wish list would be, can you meditate on the cushion? Can you reside in conscious light while having sex equally as on the cushion? Can you eat and enjoy food while having your heart connected to all beings and offering your love and light and consciousness as the nature of all beings? Can you be silent for a week? Can you dance for a week straight? Can you interact with other people so a group of external observers would all feel that you are connected to the deepest source, whether you're coming from a very masculine place or a very feminine expression? And through those developments, then you can relax and allow your spontaneous expression to come through your full spectrum of expression without mistaking spontaneity with habitual. It is so easy to go, I'm in the now, and then your expression only comes through your habitual means because you haven't unkinked the kinks and opened the various bodies so that your natural expression is spontaneous and full rather than habitual.
Well, that's one of the problems. This is a classic masculine downside, masculine trap, pathological agency, which is that you can reside in spacious emptiness and objects arising in time. The objects are kinked, the objects are kinked. So you're present now as if you are an asshole, and it's a kinked asshole.
Yes.
And that you can still reside in the now and have a freedom from that. That's the real downside of the masculine emptiness trap, so to speak, the near offenders, as we theoretically call it, and it's an almost genetic tendency for males, and certainly those who have masculine essence.
Yes.
And it's almost impossible to get out of, because it is such a powerful freedom technique that when a kinked object, a broken object, a dissociated object arises, instead of undoing the knot and inhabiting it, letting energy flow through it and being full in that dimension, instead of kinked and withdrawn from that dimension, because transcendence is so powerful, the tendency is, well, I can just get rid of, I can get away from that knot by pulling back more.
Yeah.
And so you just go back and up and in and up and in and up, and the phenomenal world is sort of more pale and dreary, except it's still, it's just getting gangrene as you continue to do that.
That's why a feminine essence partner is so useful for extreme masculine essence people, because let's say the masculine essence person is a man, it doesn't have to be. But if a man is with, say, a woman, it doesn't have to be. But if a woman has the feminine essence, the man has the masculine essence, every time he dissociates into the transcendental realm, even though in his experience it is pure and real, she will complain.
Yeah.
You know, she'll say, open your eyes. The guy's got his eyes closed, and she says, what are you meditating on? Which is consciousness, essentially. And she says, well, can you do it with your eyes open? If you can't, it's not real.
Yeah.
Well, that's, can you do it with your eyes open? Can you do it in life? Can you do it with me from the feminine side? Can you do it with these emotions?
Yeah.
Can you? Well, if you can't, if you find yourself pulling away, that's fear. And fear is not the natural expression of free consciousness.
Well, as we talked about pathological agency and pathological communion, and as you know, I have Eros and Agape, and Eros is the ascending move, and Agape is the embracing move. So you have transcend and include. And pathological Eros is Phobos, because you don't really transcend, you're afraid of, you cut off, you deny. And pathological Agape is Thanatos, which is you don't merely embrace the lower, you regress to the lower. And that's a real death instinct to move down, in a sense, into more fundamental but less significant modes of energy and life and consciousness. And those are another twist on the pitfalls that the masculine and feminine tend to fall into. And there are two different pitfalls in that sense. There's pathological Eros, pathological agency, which men tend to have, and pathological communion and pathological agape, which, well, I said man, but the masculine essence tends to have, and then these two, the feminine essence tend to have.
Exactly.
And they're really very different things. They mutually reinforce each other. The tendencies you don't have to keep an eye out for.
And since you always attract a reciprocal, if you're a masculine essence person with pathological Eros, then basically you find your purpose outside of life and relationship. You live in the transcendental domain, whether, and that could just be, in the conventional level, the financial world or the political world. So your life is about money, your life is about politics, your life is about purpose. You will always attract a partner then who's pathologically in Thanatos, whose life is about relationship and how it feels right now, and everything is reduced to exactly how it feels right now, and nothing else in the world matters. So you have one partner who's like, well, what matters is what's happening on the stock exchange, which is connected to the flow of economics across boundaries. And then you have the other partner saying, don't you love me now? What's happening? I don't feel... And so you always attract your reciprocal pathology as well as your reciprocal gifts. Those same things turned into the healthy form is the masculine partner is able to bring into life moods the transcendental vision of this is already okay, just how it is. This is consciousness. Even right now, in the midst of your anger, can't you feel my loving, humorous connection to your heart? And the feminine is, all your transcendental stuff is great, and can we express that through the body now? You know, let's feel that consciousness while we make love, while we eat, while we touch through our children. And if you aren't able to do that, she, meaning the feminine, invites that lovingly into life, and he... So one way of saying this is she teaches life and he teaches death. He teaches this moment is unnecessary, let's move beyond it, and she teaches this moment is all there is, let's make this as full as possible.
You are listening to www.integralnaked.org. Take the plunge into primordial awareness.